on. And you see what Einstein says back to you. I mean, this is why I learn things, so I can throw them at cosmic awareness, the evergreens, all the mediums I went to. Now I have ion, and I throw the same mortar at them. It's not my personal quest. It's not my spiritual salvation.
Yeah. It's almost like I couldn't give a shit anymore whether I do any kind of personal growth whatsoever.
Right.
What the hell is personal growth anyway?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There is no time. You couldn't grow.
Who the hell cares, and I don't care, and, you know,
but see, that's a given.
Get the hell out of my life.
That's a given.
Yeah.
You don't need to say that. You need to come in here and contribute to the whirlpool of confusion and mortar creation. That's what we're here for. That's what. Why is Ion here? It wants to engage in mortar. It never. That's creation. Never did it before.
I guess what a lot of people feel, or maybe I should say what I have felt, Bob, is just this constant judging of who the hell you thought I was in order to even be here in Iondom.
Okay, see, that's what you got to learn to understand. Judgment comes with mortar. Mortar is judgment. Judgment and being judgment is always part of human communication. And you should ignore that. That's why you have unhurtable feelings. I'm not concerned about
your judgment. Well, that's a good thing to hear. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've said it many times, and you're hearing it maybe for the first time. And I'm saying,
no.
If I sound like I'm judging you, you shouldn't react that way. And if I hear you judging me, I certainly won't take it seriously. I'll play off it somehow. Sometimes you have a different response. But I'm not taking, I am just being words in this situation. And the words are being expressed. It's like acting. It's all
so
the
you
different...
mean because we're on this medium, because we're on this...
because we can.
We really are human after all, right?
Look, it's a bet. You go to the pub.
This medium.
People socialize to bounce off more to each other. That's the archetype of Finnegan's Wake. They're in a pub. People always enjoy other people. But they get all mixed up what it means while they're with them. And then it sort of fucks up their evening or their next morning because they take it personally because they haven't figured out how they're not the mortar. And so they get lost in the mortar. And so society's always sorting out the mortar and organizing itself. So you can be all kinds of angles, like Ion says the dodecahedron is, towards mortar. You can come in as an anarchist. You can come in as a fascist. You can come in as a communist or as a Marxist or a monarchist. Not worrying about what people think or what they say back to you.
So you just want people to come in so that you can react to them.
Right, to talk.
So it's a total reaction scenario all the time. It's just a reacting.
It could be that. It could appear that. You could say that. But isn't it interesting how people have fun? Every weekend, the normal working stiff goes out to a party or a bar and redoes the same fucking thing, drinks his beer, throws his darts, and gets into a fight or does something else, and they do it every weekend. Humans like to interact with mortar. And that they are just being robots. The more you understand that, the more robotic you can be, and the more indifferent to the outcome you can have.
Well, I don't know if that's really the same way it is anymore, Bob, because I think there's a lot of people that are in their own private bastions of their towers, and I don't think they're out there.
Well, they are on the. They're in the chip body. That's when you bring in the other body.
Yeah.
They're in their chip body. That's the new tavern.
So I don't think it's the same kind of pubbish ways that.
No, but that's not my point. I'm saying that humans always wanted to bash themselves against each other.
Oh.
And bash may be too strong a word, but people like interacting with other humans.
You mean bump up against each other.
Yeah, play with. Play.
Rub up against each other.
The most fun for life is playing. People work, they get themselves into a grind, then they can't socialize, and they're fucked up for 6 months, then they get a little sick, then they hear Carol, then they get their magnesium, and then they feel better, and then they go out, they relax, and they stop working so hard. And what do? They go out and start mingling with people. That's the main joy of human life.
And they just laugh because it's so ridiculous anyway.
Yeah. But you are a robot. Yeah. Someone said something?
But, sorry, but you don't always, like, judge people and get controversial the way, Sue was saying. You kind of favor some people, and you're not that way to everybody.
I do it. If you hang around, I'm the same way or different ways to everybody. You got to be here for many hours.
No, I think you harass certain people more.
What?
Yes.
What'd you say?
I think you harass more.
I harass Deb. We're listening to Deb now. I always harass Deb. She's so out of it. I go by my instincts of what people are, and I'll react. I don't mind.
No, I'm not out of it, first of all. And second of all.
You did it again. You fell for the words.
Yeah, and some people you favor, and they're not even that smart, and you make them look like they're so.
You can't figure out what I'm going by. Yeah, you can't figure out what I'm going by.
They're totally.
Well, don't worry about it. So what? That's what I'm doing.
So what?
Can I ask a question? Yeah. Where is Sue from? Because she seems like she's fun.
Sue is not fun. She's a very determined, spiritually driven person who's fucked up with everybody she's ever met.
No, I like her.
That's why I know Bob.
No, because she's truthful and she's interesting.
Well, hallelujah,
who's
Deb.
This?
This is dumb Deb from Boston. You've heard her on the show. She'll say, "What is this Ion, Bob?" This is after listening for 5 years. Is this Ion is he on welfare, Bob? She comes up with stuff like that.
I don't say that. Come on.
It's just as bad as that.
No. Well, no, because it's confusing the way, because people come on and they hear them and then they don't call back, so it is a little different.
Yeah, that's definitely different. That's what we're proud of. This is the most different social mortar exchange you can ever have. It's probably the greatest that ever happened in history, and hopefully it'll keep going.
I see.
Bob, you are so amazing. This is the greatest thing in history. You are bigger than Trump, honest to freaking God.
Trump is, hey, listen, Ian is always telling me what Trump did this week that imitated me. He's always doing me.
Trump wants to be king. He doesn't want to be president.
That's right.
He wants to be king.
And he's going to move the White House up to the Hudson Avenue, and he's going to stay in the Trump Towers where he has top security. And look at this, riots. He may cause a civil war, and everybody's going to blame him like they're going to blame me, and we'll know it was me and not him. He's my Lee Harvey Oswald. That's what's going on here.
Oh, who do you think will win, Bob?
I will win. I always win. And Sue knows that. Sue has seen me win every fucking thing in the last 40 years. Going on 50 years now.
Who do you think will win the presidency?
Me.
Okay. I think Carolyn will make a nice first lady.
Oh, yeah. She'd be very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But the point is...
for king.
Yeah, and it could... I don't know how serious. It's not going to bother us or bother me, but there could be a civil war start over this.
Over the riots?
Over America. He's such a polarizing person, and he's not beholden to anybody. This is a problem for the elites, for the bureaucrats. He don't owe anybody anything. He's approximating the chaos that I'd cause.
Yeah, but it's all the stupid idiots. It's all the stupid idiots that support him and think he's an icon. It's the stupid, illiterate people that don't know any better to support him.
And that's the news from Dumb Deb in Boston, who thinks everybody else. This is what someone told me, Gene told me, this young guy comes over and watches, he makes sure he sees every Trump thing. And Gene was curious about why he was sort of obsessed, and he said, we want to see how he responds to topics. We know that his responses will be original, will be unique, they won't be guided by the habitual scripts, and that's why the young kids like him. He's sort of alive. That he's responding to whatever they throw him, and that's what he's got going for him. His answers are ridiculous.
No, I get it, because he is entertaining listening to Clinton and Bernie and all the other ones.
They're following their advisors. They're going by focus groups. They're a bunch of doing a bunch of bullshit.
Right.
You know, I don't know, but I saw this quote. This is my greatest quote for Trump. They say, what do you make of the internet? He's, we're going to close it down. Now, what the fuck? How do you do that? But if he actually believes he's going to shut it down, how can he do that? What a crazy answer. And that's
right,
what's fun about him.
Right.
That's
what
an
I would say.
Answer.
You know, Deb,
that's
I've been saying that for fucking 30 fucking years. It's called media ecology. We need a media fast. And so, Clint, if he's following any script, it's what, like on, he's following what I said. If he'll mention media ecology if that comes up. And that's what he did. What are you going to do with the internet? We're going to turn it off. Now, Sue knows I've said that for 40 years.
Mm.
Whatever the media environment was.
You're such a great guy at stirring everybody up, Bob, and making them feel like they want to smash you in the head.
Well, you know what I had said? We love, what is it? We love to hate Bob. We hate to love him. We love to hate him. You know, it flips back and forth.
Hey, Bob.
But
remember tonight.
What'd you say?
I said, do you remember tonight when Ion said about Cruz that there's a little bit of a sexual scandal going on in his world?
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my gosh, that's going to create this incredible dimension to this because A, that's Trump's main rival, and B, Cruz has that holier than thou art, you know, attitude.
Yeah.
And if that comes out, it just completely destroys that whole image that he's projected, you know, and all the right wing Christian groups that are supporting him. And I thought, okay, that's going to be just absolutely brilliant when the information starts coming out. And Susanna posted some article that showed that they're already sniffing around that. So I am just pointing out something that's already going on.
Well, look, I would say this, kid. Anybody in the public field, anybody who's trying, especially if you're a man, any man who's out there trying to make an image for himself is in it for getting laid. That's the only reason men do this. So anybody's running for politics is doing it to get access to people and women and guys, whatever he's into. And so there's always going to be a scandal around them. It's always going to be, because that's what else is there a point of going out and being an idiot and having to say follow scripts and all that these public people have to do is you get groupies, and that's what they want.
Right, but Obama doesn't have a website that goes to that stoops to that.
What'd you say?
Obama doesn't do that, though. He doesn't do it for the
sex. How do you know? Well, how would you know? There are doubles. Yo, maybe it's going to be scandals. Obama 3 had an affair. What about that? Is that an Obama 1? That isn't me. Well, he was over here speaking as if he were you. You know, what if that enters into the fray?
He just doesn't look like the type, Bob. That's
the ones that surprise you.
How about Rubio? Isn't there a sex scandal with Rubio as well?
Well, that's what Susanna is suggesting, apparently. But that's not doesn't matter. There is going to be a sex scandal. They can smear you anytime they want.
Look at the clean Canadian dinner party with Obama, with good old Trudeau and his wife and his kids and all that kind of stuff. That's the wholesome Canadian connection.
What did it show you? I don't know about it, about this, what he did.
So you haven't seen that?
No. I don't follow the Canadian stuff.
Well, it's a big state dinner that the Obamas created to welcome Justin Trudeau, his wife, and his kids to the United States.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's the Queen got to do with it?
I didn't say anything about the Queen.
I thought I heard you say something about the Queen.
No, I said something about the wholesome, you know, connection with Canada that is creating a big sort of wellstrom of, we have our own kind of funky connection with Canada, and they're wholesome and wonderful and
I'd hate to be the chance to do that. I'd hate to do that.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, Sue.
And Trudeau's wife almost looks like the Prince William's wife. What's her name?
Kate.
Kate. Yeah. Kate.
No, no, she looks pretty. I did see a picture of him leaning up against her, and she had her head down, and she had a swinky dress on. That was nice. But here's what we can look forward to. As this, as we, Bob and Carol, Bob and Connie surface, I guarantee you're going to start seeing videos of me fucking you or fucking Ginny or fucking someone else. They're going to smear us incredibly, and they're going to have Carolyn fucking Trump or something. You understand that is inevitable? That's inevitable when push comes to shove.
What?
Yes.
What do you mean? Okay, come on. Tell me what you mean.
Well, when you're creating a new empire and you're threatening the old empires, they have incredible tricks to smear you. Like these riots in front of Trudeau, in front of Trump, are all organized. Trump said that. These are all planned. They're going to disrupt. They're going to try to make a civil war and blame it on Trump. That'll be part of the imagery in the TV body that he's going to have to deal with, that he's going to have interesting responses to. I tell you, as we get, whatever we become, influential, they will start to expose us as assholes in whatever way they can come up with. They're going
so Trump will, or who will?
No, the secret empires.
Oh, so you?
What Ian calls Big Pharma.
They're trying to sabotage Trump with those.
No, they're going to sabotage me. I'm talking about what's going to happen to me and Carolyn as we become quote powerful.
Big Pharma is what you're talking about.
Well, that's one of them.
Yeah.
Prince Charles. Well, why do you think I put that memo into the Bosmia ecology, that's the metaphor of addressing Prince Charles. He represents an empire. And they are not going to take kindly to what we're doing. Remember I told you, half an hour ago that these main names are what we talk about, what they're doing. Now here's the great thing, I've got such fantastic fucking protection, it's going to be really hard to take me out. I've got Ion working for me. I got the ultimate weapon.
Yeah. Cool.
Think of that. Yeah. You got Ion. Ion's always, you heard the story. I was walking through the park a couple years ago, whenever it was, and they took a shot at me, but they missed because they didn't know that I walk ahead of myself. I'm a vibration ahead of myself, so they shot at the image of me.
Which park?
The golf course, just below us on the way to the beach.
So they were after you then?
I played that. I've played a lot of interesting stuff over the last few months after the music or after whatever we done, before the Zappa thing, you may not have caught them all.
How do we know that the shot is true?
Bob, there's so much stuff.
I don't know if anything's true. It's not important, but I'm telling you that as we become more of a threat, they'll start releasing all kinds of crazy information about us. They'll make holograms. They'll make up simulate. That's why we will go stealth. You won't know who we are, what we are after at a certain point.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sort of hoping for that. I hope it doesn't happen, but I'm certainly ready for it if it happens.
Well, I agree.
I'm so ready, I don't even have to think about it. Ion's going to take care of it. You realize at least once a week, he'll tell me, Bob, this is happening. But don't worry, we got it, Bob. We've got this. We've got your forehead. That's a very common statement said in private session.
Can I inherit your empire?
Bob. Beg your pardon?
Can I inherit RNA and all the magnesium?
Did you say inhabit? Can you inherit?
Inherit. Like when you guys get eliminated, can I take over?
No. It's up to Ion, not me. You can apply. You can audition.
Oh.
Look, Deb, even none of us have ever had the guts to say that. Where did that come from?
Thank you. Thank you, Ginny.
Was that Ginny? I thought it was Deb. Is Ginny the one who said that?
No, said it.
Kim. Kim said it, Bob.
That's what Deb, you're reflecting what's going on. There's all these big corporate guys are saying, how do I become part of this, Bob? How do I get my hands into the first floor? That's what they're all looking to do.
Right. Now, there is another mineral, a magnesium that's ionic or whatever. And it's a liquid. It's very similar to yours. It's called Eidon, E-I-D-O-N.
E-I or I-E?
E-I.
Carol, do you know E-I-D-O-N? Eidon? Eidon liquid ionic stuff? Eidon? No, you don't know it. But it doesn't matter what Look, at you got a company, a farmer, a big farmer changed names to it was ISIS. You can understand why they get rid of that name, because that's a terrorist icon now. And they changed it to Ion Is. How's that for sucking up to us? They say, yeah, we believe Ion. Please, Bob, we accept you. We think you're great. Let us in.
I see.
I mean, I made a new statement today. He said, Big Pharma is hoping and betting on Carolyn. Now, what does that mean? They hope that something can heal the world or heal people or help them, because they know Big Pharma ain't going to do it, and Big Pharma is probably subject to lawsuits at some point. So they're hoping that they can come up with an answer, and Carolyn's their answer. Carolyn's going to save it for them. Save the action of being a pharmacy. The institution of pharmacy is in threat.
How are they in threat?
So what does that say about Carolyn when she...
But they're making billions of dollars. They're thriving. How are they in threat?
When you make billions of dollars, you have no place to put it. They can't trust any bank or any other institution. That's a big crisis about who's going to offer a safety haven for your wealth.
Do you, Bob, do you think that cancer they don't want to find a solution, that they're trying to make money off of it, that they can cure it?
A lot of people have that motive, yes. Not everybody, but a lot of people do. You'll see. Ion has told us, and I've told you, that when we treat cancer and these things successfully, humans will come up with another worse problem. They must have contrast. They must keep... This is the myth they don't tell you in school, that, you know, we're going to solve this problem, solve that problem. They don't know that the basic nature of little man is to create more problems. So Carolyn's going to become really good at coming up with the new solutions, every new fucking shit that the little man will bring up. That's going to be the game.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
That's the game.
Now, isn't she tired of the game, though? Like what?
Is who tired? Carolyn?
Carolyn.
No, that's what Carolyn lives with. She's like Dennis Ring. She fucking just has to keep competing. She's a competitor. She loves challenges, just like you do. Well, no, you don't like being challenged. So you got to switch that around. Yeah. You got to start getting ready for challenges. So you got to dig it. I mean, Carolyn, you can't stop her. She doesn't fucking take clients anymore, but she's still on there emailing everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's good at...
Yeah, but you, Bob, you don't constantly take on these things.
No, I'm a jerk-off. I'm a gigolo, Sue. I'm a fucking gigolo. I've been there for thousands of years. I've been a gigolo.
Oh, you're a gigolo. Bob the gigolo. Of course.
I take the top women of every top woman of the last 3,000 years I've hung out with.
Oh, yeah. But the biggest and best has been Carolyn.
So far.
Yep.
Opens for auditioning.
Yeah.
Oh, Bert's back. Finally, Bert's back.
I was just going to ask you where Bert was.
Oh,
but let me just say this. EIDON, I looked it up because it did sound familiar, because a couple years ago... A client of mine
that?
Up there.
Oh, Bob,
Iden.
Let us talk.
Shut up, Deb. For fuck's sake, Dr. Dean is speaking.
I said let her talk.
Oh, yeah. It comes out, interrupts everybody. Let her talk. Okay, Carol.
So someone was asking about the Iden ionic mineral, E-I-D-O-N. It reminded me of something a client told me up in Canada years ago. So I called them, got in touch with them. And they do some sort of ionic minerals, but it turns out their magnesium was like 4,000 parts per million, whereas REMAG is 60,000 parts per million. So they're just going on the ionic word, being something that's hot right now, but they don't have any quantity to them.
Oh, I see. Hmm. Okay, thank you. You called them up just now?
No, a few years ago.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Carolyn. It's Debbie in Boston who asked about it.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay, Debbie.
Carolyn's new best friend. Carolyn, she's so Pisces. She's quadruple Pisces. She merges with whoever she's talking to. So Debbie is Carolyn's best friend right now.
And then there's Bert.
Yeah, that, oh, that's even another best friend.
Hey,
best
friend. Carol, Carol, hey, can I just question? A fast one?
Neighbor. Yeah, real fast.
Okay. There is a the vitamin D that you use, that's the cod liver oil. There was some controversy that it was rancid or there
was
some...
It was bullshit. Bullshit.
Oh.
Just other companies trying to bring them down because they're doing such good work. Total bullshit.
Who's doing good work, Carol?
The Blue Ice Royal people creating
the
their fermented cod liver oil. So it's bullshit.
Oh.
Okay.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question?
Well, no, there's one other company that's, I think, from, like, that. Good.
I muted her. I just had to see which button she is on so I can mute her.
Okay.
Okay, over to Bert. Bert hasn't been here for years.
Yes. Oh, now, okay. Sue, are you still here, Sue?
Hey, Bert. How are you, Bert? Hey,
yeah, they met.
They even met. They even met. I avoided Bert. I went to the mountains of Switzerland. I couldn't go to Zurich.
but you missed a wonderful guy.
Well, that's what I'm going to bring up. Now, Sue, I think you might know this. Bert's the one doing the most homework next to Roxana and maybe other people I don't know about, but Bert does his homework every week, so we always have to get his Walter Cronkite news summary of what fantastic shit I've been doing, because he's always looking into what Bob's done, and he's been gone for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Bert, what is your report? What have I been doing and amazing you the last 2 or 3 weeks? Let's hear an update on that.
Yay, Bert.
Well, the first thing, Bob, was it 3 weeks ago we were talking about Dr. Beter, and I ordered his book, The Conspiracy Against the Dollar. And I'm halfway through, and it's unbelievable what he's outlining, because it's almost like another layer closer to what LaRouche talked about. So I see why Beter is in LaRouche quadrant, but it's unbelievable what he's outlining with the
Rockefeller. That's 73. Hey, Bert, I think he coined the word stagflation. I think that's what he did. He created that word.
Yeah.
The one that became an icon in the 70s. He does it in 1973 in that book. Now, another thing, Bert, you go to the diaries, look in 72, 73, where me and the British intelligence team come to him and tell him to go back and write that book. You'll see that right in the diaries.
Wow. Wow. I mean, it's really, it's funny how he progresses in it, because when you first, like the first 20 pages, it's like an easy read, but as I go further, I'm like, man, I gotta start like do it. It challenges you to do some research, because he's outlining what they did. And what's funny, the synchronicity for me is that I was in Poland for a day and a half for work. And there was always a question, like, how is this happening that I'm in a former communist country, and, you know, there's business being done there by banks. And when I came home, that's when I started reading deeper, and I see how they're doing that now, based on what I read in Dr. Beter's book. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable for me. Unbelievable. But
you mean, Bert, that the world economy can't support communism, so that had to go?
No, it's a bit of a Bob, it's tied to Bob thing, because I see the merger of the five bodies taking place. It's something Bob said when I first started coming on about that everyone in the world will be challenged with ION here, meaning that the East goes West, the West goes East, like McLuhan said, and that's what I saw in Poland. I mean, you see remnants of the former Soviet bloc. I mean, in fact, we were in a bar because of the business thing, and it was like all the paraphernalia that they had when they were communists, you know, all the old slogans and everything. I think there was one in there, the Western imperialists. It was in Polish, but the Western imperialists are going to influence you with their Coca-Cola was one sign they had over the bar. So it's... But you see the merger. You see the merger of everyone is being affected there. I mean, I started to see the merger of the five bodies when I was there, because everyone's plugged in. The whole city that I was in had free Wi-Fi.
Right. So listen to this, Bert. The reason Why is Beter in the Croker quadrant? Because do you have the contents of my Fatty Communion book?
Yes.
Did I ever send that to you? You have that.
Yes,
go to the, I think it's the second last or last quote in the Croker section. You'll see him discuss the flipping of east to west and west to east in his post-Marxist terms. And so he's saying much the same thing as Beter 20 years later. He calls it bi-modernism, but you'll find it very interesting what he says in light of what you notice Beter saying, and Croker saying it. And that's one of the reasons why I put Beter in the Croker quadrant. They're similar.
Yes.
From opposite.
It's funny,
angles.
I found, funny you're saying about, Croker is that I finally found some Croker that I can understand, and it's in Fatty Communion. I mean, I have it.
Yes.
What is it? Possessed Individual, but you have some, I found some really good quotes that I can understand, and I found one about McLuhan last week.
Right, that's
talking
really good.
About McLuhan. Yes.
Yeah, he talks, the ending sentence is McLuhan becomes a victim of his own sign crime, is the last sentence of the McLuhan statement.
Yes.
But here's the thing. That's the point of my book. It's a mini course. I carefully lay out the quotes from all these complex polymaths that if you study them, it's a best introduction. It's a way of understanding them. I'm providing you a toolkit to get into their later, more complex stuff. That's what the quotes are carefully selected to do that.
Okay, well, I thought, I'm looking at your chart now. I thought Beter was in, the LaRouche, because the way he's outlining it, it's very controversial, like what I was reading of the Venetians.
Right.
The LaRouche, but now you say Beter's in the, and I'm looking, he's in the Croker quadrant, so that puts a whole nother light on it. It's very technical. Very technical. Very technical.
And another reason is that Croker talks about the Android processor, and Beter's term is the organic robotoid. They're both talking about the flesh becoming a robot, and the Android meme coming alive and going beyond the human dimension, going beyond the robot.
Yeah.
That's where the Bob Profundity comes in. If you start looking at it like you're doing and studying it and connecting things, then you'll see an amazing vision unfold, a Dobbs vision that was ready for ION. Which you see going
Yes, and that's what I was reading, some Croker in the Fatty Community. He's describing the Android, how people are becoming digitized, very robotoids.
Right.
Just like what you said, Beter, robotoids. And there's
organic.
One quote in there, he was talking about, the organic. I was one quote he was talking, and it made me think of this Trump phenomenon. There's, I don't have it per se verbatim.
Yeah, there's some good political stuff. Around a
1920s
painting, Mark somebody's painting. It's a merry-go-round quote about politics.
Yes.
I mean, I could quickly go there now. I don't want to do it right now, but we could.
No.
I could read you the quotes. But we just want a surface. This is just a quick minutes of the meeting. What happened for Bert the last two or three weeks? And we're hearing it. You're doing well.
Also, Bob, I heard last week, Bob, you said something, and I was listening, and I blew my mind about Zappa doing jazz fusion, and I listened to Hot Rats last week, and that's a phenomenal album. Phenomenal album.
Right.
I enjoyed it.
And here's Miles Davis in 69. You can look at documentaries. He's starting to play in rock concerts. He's trying to figure out how to bring this old jazz, crusty jazz world into the rock world. And he's trying to figure out, and he's going to eventually do Bitches Brew and have great albums, but fucking Zappa beat him to it.
Yeah.
Hot Rats. But the jazz world couldn't admit that. They couldn't admit that Frank was upstaging the gods. But the gods were forced to do this fusion rock because Zappa was already doing it, and they were being pulled that way anyways.
Right. Right. Exactly. And you know what? One thing that wonders, two cuts on there, Willie the Pimp and the Gumbo Variations, where the guy's playing the violin.
Violin. Sugar Cane Harris.
And,
you know who that guy is?
No.
He's an R&B guy. He and his brother, Don and Dewey, I could bring it up and play you. They do the song The Letter in the 50s. He's just a little kid doing R&B. He goes on to master the violin, and then he plays with Frank as Sugar Cane Harris. But he's Don and Dewey. He's Don.
And that... And that's cutting edge, because that's 69. I mean, that's like no one's probably ever heard, at that time, heard a violin played that way, ever.
No.
I mean, I don't know it, but 69,
well, he's
that's
part of
amazing.
The great L.A. scene. There's such great music coming out of L.A. in the late 60s. And, you know, he goes on to become a regular member of the Jefferson Airplane, Jefferson Starship, or Hot Tuna, one of those bands. They scarf him up.
Wow.
But see, this is what Bert does, Sue. He will listen to the stuff I play in my private session the past couple weeks. He won't notice the profundity of what fucking Ian is saying to me. We may not remember it all now, but you know you heard some incredible stuff said to me the past couple weeks and when I played those excerpts well into the show. Right, Bert?
No, Bob. Yes, Bob's been opening up his treasure chest since 2013, but this beginning of this year, it's a whole other level with what Ion is telling Bob.
It's right there for you guys to hear. Are you listening to that, Sue? Are you missing anything?
Yeah, some of it. Yeah. I mean, Bob, really, you have been creating so much content. How the hell people keep up with you is amazing.
You have to have a job like Bert,
amazing.
Where you can listen on the job. That's what you have to have. You got to have a job where you can listen to my stuff and the boss doesn't matter, doesn't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And, I mean, I go to sleep sometime listening to Payday, and I wake up and I'm hearing it, and then I go back to sleep, and then I wake up and I'm hearing it, and it, like, goes on all friggin' night.
That's right.
Right? And I don't know what I'm hearing, what I'm not hearing. It's like in and out of an exotic world.
Yeah.
It's just an exotic world. And I really, really appreciate what Bert and what Roxy have contributed to your Ion, you know, your Ion stuff and your Zappa stuff, because I have never been a big Zappa follower, but my God, since I know, but with you guys and hearing what you're doing, and then I've also been, you know, at Zappa concerts with Bob, watching him do his, you know, air guitar.
And you're not a Zappa fan, Sue? You went to concerts with Zappa and you're not a Zappa fan? Oh, my goodness.
I know.
It's a bad mark. You know, it's not good on a resume.
What can I say? I'm a holdout.
That's a holdout. You're trying to keep her sanity.
Yeah.
What kind of music? What is your music taste? I'm curious, what's your musical taste?
She likes Lottie. She likes that Lottie somebody of the late 70s. What was it, Lottie Lovitch?
I'm visual.
Lenny
what
Lovitch.
What can I say? I'm visual. What can I say? I'm a visual person. I'm not really big time into music. I'm really sorry about that. But, hey, but Bob has introduced me to so many different aspects of it. It's wonderful. And Cage stuff, I mean, all the video stuff, all the art over the years. I guess I can say I sort of do appreciate Zappa in certain forms. I think I loved his which
you like Bert Weaney sandwich.
Bert Weaney sandwich. Arriving too late for a drowning
rich. And you like Bert Weaney sandwich and 1970 Holiday in Berlin. You like that.
Yeah. And I've certainly been to Bob's house and been inundated with Zappa stuff, you know, but, hey, I can let it roll over my head. I can just, you know, sit there like a dunce and let it kind of flow over and not totally embrace it. But there were wonderful things about Zappa, and certainly that time that I was able to introduce Bob to Zappa's drummer to
piano
Zappa
player.
And have
piano
yeah,
player.
Was he the piano player or the drummer?
Only for that tour in 84. His name was Alan Zavod, Z-A-V-O-D. He was a jazz guy. He didn't stay long with Frank. He just did that tour. But we saw him in Halifax the night Reagan got reelected, November 6th, 1984.
1984.
I think it was November 6th, the day Reagan got elected, reelected. That's, we were in Halifax.
How do you like that, eh? Bob can remember that.
Yeah.
Well, I just remember, Bob, that time when we went to the concert. You were absolutely fucking amazing doing your air guitar in the aisle.
I was the only guy dancing in the aisle. These were passive Nova Scotians.
Yeah. It was amazing. And here you were with all these Club 22 types, right?
Including Garrett.
Garrett.
That was a great triumph, having Garrett there.
Yeah, Garrett was there. He had his ascot on. He had his formal dress on. He was really awesome. And, who else was there?
Greg and Art.
Greg and Art, yeah. And that was pretty amazing. So we went there and saw, and afterwards you thought, where would they go? Would they go to this club? Would they go to that club? And we tried to figure out where we could go in Halifax to find Zappa. But we didn't go anywhere, did we?
Just a minute. I'm getting Carolyn to mute. You're stirring there. So what did you say? We went where?
We didn't go anywhere that night. I don't think we could figure out any club Zappa would go to.
Yeah, everything was closed down. It was late. And we didn't know where Zappa was. It was the next day, Bert, and I've told the story before, Sue, of course, had to go do bullshit bourgeois, go to a fucking shopping mall, buy some crap, and I had nothing to do. I wasn't going to stay home in her stupid little house. So I said, oh, fuck, let's go. So I went along, sat along there. I said, what am I wasting my time? I got to get back to Toronto. Fuck this shit. I can't handle this. Halifax. There's nothing going on here. And I'm sitting there, and Sue goes into the fucking mall. She goes into the mall, and she comes out with a guy. What? What are you speaking the same time as I am?
Yes.
Listen to this, Bert. Bob is sitting in my car, okay? I'm parked outside on the road. I'm running into the mall to grab something. I don't even know what it is. As I'm going through the roundabout thing there that you go into the mall with, I run into this guy, and it turns out to be Zappa's drummer.
No, piano player. Piano player.
Oh,
Alan Zavod.
Anyway, I recognize the guy. I say, hey, weren't you in the Zappa thing last night? And, oh, my God, it was fantastic. Had a great time. And I'm coming in the doors. This guy's going out the doors. And I say, hey, what you doing? How come you're still here? And he says, oh, well, our flight's not going till later on. I said, hey, let me drive you back to your hotel. He goes, oh, just up the hill. I said, no, let me drive you back to the hotel. It would be a pleasure. He said, okay. So we go back to the car. I said, Bob, get in the back of the car.
Okay, so now let me, Sue.
Bob doesn't
I'm
know
sitting,
who
wait, Sue,
guy
my
is,
turn, Sue. Now let me fill in. Wait a minute, Sue. I have to mute, Sue. I'm going to mute you, Sue. Listen.
And listen, Bob. Wait a minute.
Where is Sue?
I recognize this guy. I gave up whatever I was going to that mall for to bring him back, to put him in the car, to drive him back to the hotel. And I know it was just up the hill, but frig, I put him in the car. I thought, oh, Bob's going to love this.
Okay, but look, Sue, here's my perspective. What? I'm sitting there in the car wondering how long I got to put up with Sue buying crap. And she comes out with a guy, and I go, that fucking floozy. She picked up a fucking asshole. What a fucking prostitute, you know. What a fucking whore. You know, she has to fucking always meeting people. Always meeting. So this fucking idiot comes out. I say, oh, shit, I got to get in the back seat. So I get in the back seat. This long-haired asshole gets in the front seat. He's kind of looking at Sue, and I look at him, and then I says, holy shit, that's fucking Alan Zavod! And I go, what? So I immediately liked the guy. I switched off my hate vibes. Immediately say, wow.
Bob, you didn't know who he was for the first half, you know, like the first 15 minutes. You didn't know who the hell he was.
No, we were just, it wasn't that long, Sue. It wasn't that long, because very quickly, I'm saying, where do you guys stay? Where are you staying? And he said, the Citadel Inn, which was just 100 yards up the hill. And it was very short.
I was driving them up. I was driving him up there.
So I start going on to him saying, look, Frank's there, right? Yeah. Is there a way I can get to talk to Frank? And he says, well, I'll see. So a little while later, either he or the bodyguard comes by and says, Frank's eating right now. He'll see you when he's finished. And I couldn't believe it. Holy shit. Because if you're not on the inside network, you can't get to see him. I mean, I can get backstage in New York or places where I have friends who know Zappa and get me in if I'm not in direct contact with them. This is in Nova Scotia, the fucking cold part of the Atlantic Ocean, and nowhere land, no connection. I don't even know where he is. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting there with him, thanks to Sue and her prostitute ways of picking up assholes all the time.
Hey, Bob, it was the Sue connection. What are you talking about?
I mean, Sue could gloat about that for the next 2,000 years. I mean, and then she got the only picture of me and Frank together. There's never been a photo of me and Frank, and she got it.
Wow.
So I'm sitting there, Bert, I'm sitting there when Bob and Zappa are sitting in the hotel lobby. Right? And I'm sitting there with Frank's bodyguard, and we're just sitting there and watching Bob and Zappa sitting on the couch together and yakking away.
But we had a reason to be together, Sue, because in August I was in New York with him, and I arranged to send the May Brussels recordings to him. So now it is November, a few months later, and I want to know what he thinks of them. And so we start talking about that, and he hasn't listened to them yet. And he tells me, he gives me Jane Friedman, his agent's name, about, you know, go through her if you have some more questions, because I'm on tour now, you can't call me at home, so go through my agent. So we arranged for future communications about what he makes of the May stuff, May Brussels stuff. So I then end up there at his home on May 15th, I think it's Jerry Fialko's birthday, the May 14th or 15th, the Ides of March that Ian's talking about this week, and with Frank, and that's when we had a big, continued this summit about the May Brussels tapes, and shortly after that he calls up May Brussels, this is in 1985, and gives her a computer. But he got this information from her and some of the tapes I sent him that he used when he goes in September 1985, to Congress to do his famous speech against the censors of rock lyrics. That all came a part of that connecting for him to feel confident, because he had the dirt on everybody that was on the committee, which he got from May, was because Sue, I mean, it wasn't that important for me to talk to him at that day, because it could have happened later and he hadn't heard the tapes yet, but having been with him in August, that reinforced it, put his mind onto it, made sure he got the tapes, and that led to him, a year later, doing what he's most famous for now, you know, chewing out the politicians. That's what people know him as.
So I was just your little link there, Bob.
Right.
To get you to Zappa.
Right.
And it was so
and change the world again.
It's so funny to come back to the car and say, "Hey, Bob, get in the back."
Yeah. And I'm saying, and I'm a nice guy. I'm only a fucking
Zappa
guest.
Band members in the front of my car drive them up to the air to the hotel.
In my memory, it didn't
and
take
Bob
me long. Yeah, I was pissed off. Fucking idiocy. And I don't remember it taking very long for me to figure out what it is, but I do remember a period of, well, let Sue and him talk. And then I guess
I introduce you.
Maybe I didn't recognize him. Maybe you said who he was, and then I recognized him.
You didn't recognize him.
And you can see this guy. You can see this guy in a few videos of 1984 concerts. You'll see him playing the piano. He used to do long solos, and some of the other band members later said that he was a bit didn't know how to really fit into Frank's band. He was used to doing long solos, but he didn't get long enough, and it's sort of awkward what he does. It's really good, but you can see.
Yeah, well, good thing he was a diss, because he ended up in my car, and I drove him like 3 blocks back to the hotel.
Right.
Good thing he was a diss, Bob.
What?
Good thing he was a ditz.
That's right. And then he's sitting there.
He ended up in my car with you in the back seat and me driving him 3 blocks up to the hotel.
No, he's got to think back. If he's smart, he'll go, that's Bob's intelligence agent. Because he has to say, he meets this woman in the doorway who insists to drive him back, and then all of a sudden he's watching the guy that Sue was sitting with is talking to Frank in a summit meeting right there in the lobby. He has to wonder, how did this happen? How did this guy who knew Frank end up sitting there with a serious conversation? You know?
Well, I don't remember seeing him when Frank was
I don't either.
In the lobby. No,
but he could have been looking at it from the distance.
Yeah, who knows? But I remember Frank walking us out to the front doors, and I remember what a sort of gentleman he was.
Yes.
He was very charming and
aristocratic.
I mean, I didn't I didn't really speak to him, but I asked if I could take a picture of the two of you together, and he was very accommodating that way. And
well, you might have noticed how he was talking. I talked to him about Garrett, and you probably picked up the vibe, how respectful he was when I told him what Garrett said about his work. I said that Garrett...
Yeah, that it was like a... What was it was like a waterfall of music.
No, he said, Garrett said that Zappa was a force of, was harnessing and sculpting the forces of nature.
Yeah, force of nature.
Forces. Natural forces. And I know Zappa had never heard anybody say that to him, so I give him a little intro about who Garrett is, how important he is, and then I say what he said. And his respect and sincere response to that is what Sue's picking up about his aristocratic gentlemanliness.
I could also understand if he was walking us out to the front door, how women could fall for him and his charm.
Yeah, yeah. Even though sometimes he looks ugly. I know what you mean. Sometimes he looks ugly.
I mean, he was just very, you know, respectful and like a gentleman to me as I walked out with you guys and Bob. But I could definitely feel that he was checking me out as a female, that's for sure.
Right. Now, look at this, Sue. What you're really picking up is that years of me and Frank, you know, helping each other. Many conversations, many things we'd done. I'd given him top information. That's what you should have seen, the respect that he gave me. That's what you would have picked up. I mean, it was like the gentleman part of him came out of him because I was there as a gentleman.
Yeah. I mean, Bob has always been a gentleman in my world, but I didn't expect that to be a Zappa thing.
Right.
Like, I always sort of thought that Zappa would be rougher or
thicker.
You know, just thicker or rougher, more stupid, or just a rocker kind of thing.
Right.
But he was elegant.
Right, and you saw a documentary of him a few years ago, and you saw the even more elegance in him. That blew you away.
Yeah. And I like that aspect, you know. It's almost like seeing Zappa back in the day when he first got on and did the bicycle thing on
Steve Allen.
At the television. Steve Allen, yeah. The bicycle thing where he was all dressed up in his suit and, you know, did his kind of, you know, this is sort of a new thing, but it's okay for you guys, and I'm just going to walk you through it. And, you know, just he just had a very interesting sort of elegance to him. I was really impressed.
He was a genius.
He had the
genius, you know, sovereign God consciousness coming out of him, even when he was young.
You know, it's almost like McLuhan. You know, McLuhan was a very classic guy. He just wanted to stand more at attention when you were around him.
That's right. Pay attention.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You kind of stood up straight and you looked at him in the eye and you kind of thought, yeah, this is a total human being here with an intelligence and an elegance about living on this planet. And how wonderful it is for me to stand here and meet this person.
Right.
You know?
Okay, now we had lots of contact with that through Garrett. Garrett equally matched that kind of aristocratic bearing.
Oh, yeah.
So let's go on to another point. I want to hear more. Now, we have someone from Toronto. Who is this, 647? This is not Daniel Libby, is it? 647, Toronto. See what I'm up against, Bert? Nobody says anything. So back to... Oh, wait. Yes. Yes, you're here. You spoke. What's your name?
You spoke. Jason.
Oh, yeah. We've had Jason before, the Canadian guy. Okay, Jason, just hold it for a minute before we put the laser beam on you. Bert, continue the minutes of the meeting. What other astounding things did you realize this past couple of weeks?
Well, I got to listen to your engagement with Ion about the two physical. And that's really That's totally new. Totally new, and it had me like it. I have some questions, but I'm for Ion on that because it's almost like he gave me some clues about what that is. I mean,
well, here's,
to ask some
questions. Who gave clues? Who gave you clues?
Ion gave me clues. Yes. I asked him some questions about. He told me about the virtual. When I asked about the CERN and about the dark energy, and Ion said, "Well, you need to be, you know, afraid of that virtual particles." And then I got to looking at virtual particles this week, and just that's really interesting about this two physical. There's a lot of questioning that everyone that's been in Ion them for the last 6 years should ask Ion about that because that's totally new. Totally new.
Let me tell you, Bert, here's my take on it so far. The post-guff, no guff to go to, but I'm saying people were going, he said, to a purgatory, to a limbo.
Yeah.
He used those terms. And then he now says there's this two physical. So my theory, not based on anything, it's not true, we don't know if it's true, my theory is that there's a new physical, this new place, maybe it's the pocket dimensions, is... more physical than the guff, because it's not the guff, but it's where dead people go. So it's sort of the guff, but it's too physical to be the guff. That's what I'm taking T-O-O physical to mean. It's this new post-guff closer to the physical that dead people can only go to. That's all they can go to.
Yeah, and you know, and what got me really twisted is because, what was it, January... You did a private session, and I don't have the notes, or I gotta find my notes. But he also started talking about reincarnation again.
Yeah, in a new way, never even did before.
Right.
Yeah.
And
there's
that's
important.
They said something about reincarnation, but I gotta find it and try to put the two together to see if there's a link. But that's totally new because Ion's talking about reincarnation. But he's always like
that's
a riddle.
Right.
It's always a riddle. Talks of reincarnation. Always a riddle.
Hey, Bert, when he starts talking about something, it's sort of obsolete. So reincarnation it may not be involved with the post-guff thing or the two physical. So now he can talk about it and tell us what it is, but really it is what it was. You know what I mean?
Yes. I mean, whatever Ion talks about is gone. We're in a whole new a whole new set of an environment. If Ion's talking about it, we're beyond it.
And that's why when people accidentally hit a question that Ion balks at answering, it's because, oh, that's new stuff. That's not due for another 6 months. I'll have to say something to divert it and not say what is going to be said in 6 months in perfect timing. You know, that's why you get hesitation from Ion. He's very careful of the effects of what he's doing as a composition, as a composer.
Yes.
Because he knows how we're going to react, how it's going to waylay us and take 2 years before he can update us rather than 6 months. If he doesn't answer the question, he doesn't create a fill-in distraction.
But I didn't think that time meant anything.
It does, in ratios. He calls it timing. You know, you're in time, Sue. You're ultimately not, but you are living within mortar and within time aspects of your mind, and as you lose that, there's a lot of complications or rabbit holes that you will go through, and that's what Ion is playing with, or orchestrating, or having your best interest in mind.
Right.
Like there's no, you don't say there's no time or no death. No, these statements are immature. It's always both and beginning. So it's actually nothing to say about any topic. But then you figure out ways to talk about it and to see what the timing or who you are, where you lead to, what fallacy you lead to. This is why no philosopher said what McLuhan said. You think my whole fallacy is wrong. Why is he calling his work a fallacy? It's very important.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best fallacy among everybody else's fallacy. You know, because speech is limited. So if you're talking, you're limited right there. So within the era of speaking, McLuhan said, my speaking is better than your speaking, even though we're both fools in talking. And then also, you have to talk anyways to work your way through mortar. So it's no matter
what. And now people are just texting, so they're not speaking.
Right. And they get very paranoid about talking. They're very careful about what they say.
Yeah.
People. Because they can be taped or something can come from it. So they're paranoid about speaking and also paranoid about the chip body. And the more paranoid they are about what they say on the chip body means we're moving into a place they don't suspect. Something they're not paranoid. People are never ready for what's really going to nail them. They're always paranoid about the rearview mirror.